Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's back.
Hey, guys.
Yay.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
Oh, tired, but good.
Yeah.
Really tired.
Really tired,
but,
yeah.
Like, not like, in a good mood, but really exhausted.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, it's Friday, so we were supposed to be taping a Higurashi show right now.
I had to, it's like, this is 50 episodes. Like, I have doubts.
I always
have doubts. This is 50 episodes and this is a really bad crunch
every
time.
Every time we do this shit, I'm like, I can do it. I can cram this whole fucking thing down my throat.
You know, sometimes we make it, like Gundam Wing.
Yeah, we did it with Gundam Wing.
We didn't make it this time.
No. Higurashi is, I mean, I don't want to say, like, because if I say, like, oh, it's brutal, it's like, yeah, it's a horror show. But, like, it is, I'm not, okay.
It's a puzzle box, so
I'm not sure I love the thing where it's a visual novel and they just show you every single route.
Right.
I don't need to see all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just show me the interesting ones.
Right.
Not all of them. I don't need you to slavishly adapt every line of the visual novel.
Sure.
I don't need you to do that. So 50 fucking episodes of this thing?
Yeah, it's a bit much.
Holy cow. Anyway, we'll get through it. We will do that show.
Yes, we will do that show. We just didn't make it in time for
Halloween. And I'm very sorry that we didn't manage to make it through that. But we had a couple other things to talk about, so we wanted to, you know, have a little episode here for you on your weekend. Yo, we saw the Mamoru Hosoda film Mirai.
Mm-hmm.
And last week I brought it up and was like, hey, I saw this movie Mirai, and I'm gonna wait till Jacob comes back on the show
mm-hmm.
to talk about it. We both sat down and watched this. Jacob, what did you think of Mamoru Hosoda's Mirai?
I did not care for it at all.
Right. So what would you say are the, without turning this into like a yo,
I don't want to beat up on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because that,
but I didn't
exactly
like it.
Right, and that's really the sentiment. It's like I didn't like this movie, but it doesn't. I'm not going to sit here and be like it's fucking garbage. Like no,
yeah, it didn't like deeply offend me. I was just like, I don't think this is working. I think you're trying a cool, ambitious thing to some extent that is not coming together.
What's that movie about?
All right, so here's the. Not the plot, but like what the core of the movie is. Like, here's what this movie is attempting to do. It is attempting to communicate to a child. And when I say a child, I don't mean a 10-year-old boy, 11-year-old boy. I mean 3 to 4-year-old little bitty boy, not older than 5. I think younger than 5. It is trying to communicate, reflections and understandings of family relationships, dynamics, and like emotional truths that you would understand as like a 35, 40-year-old person, maybe,
mm-hmm.
or like some maybe my age or older. And it is trying to communicate all that to a 4-year-old boy through like magical realism, through fantasies he's having that he can't actually, there's no way he could actually imagine this because there's no way his brain is developed enough to imagine this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like magical realism visions that are sent to him by the director, basically. And when you expand beyond this, you're like, well, this is impossible. There's no way this kid can imagine this stuff. So it's kind of like, the movie feels basically like a very expensive message from Mamoru Hosoda to his child.
Yeah, which
that is what it is.
His kid won't
be able to appreciate it until he's much older.
Like the main character is a 4-year-old who mm-hmm. doesn't mature emotionally.
Yeah.
It just he whines and cries and responds to everything in the exact way that you would expect a particularly sort of emotionally stunted 4-year-old. Like, look, I've had conversations with 4-year-olds sometimes, and this kid is a little, like, not quite as bright as some of those 4-year-olds. His emotional reaction...
He's a very average child.
His emotional reaction to everything is to cry, run away from it, misunderstand it, and then that's through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is just like, well, son, here's what I need you to understand about life. And it's like...
Your kid is way too young to
Your kid's too young
this.
To understand this, and when he gets older and he watches it, he'll be like, who did you make this for?
Yeah, because when he gets older, by the time he gets old enough to
condescending.
Appreciate this movie... So this movie, this is why I did not care for this movie. The central conceit doesn't really work except as a message, as an art piece. Like, it doesn't work. The story doesn't make sense in context. You have to look at it out of context as what was this created to do or to say. Then it makes sense, but then it feels condescending and patronizing.
Totally.
So that was my issue.
And
with
he kept trying to, like, so there's a bunch of, like, really awkward CG integration, and he's trying to do some Ghibli shit with the faces. And he keeps, like, focusing in on the kid's, like, crying face as though you're supposed to be like, oh, look at what he's doing with this face. I can just feel the emotion here. It's like, it does not work. It does not work. I really didn't like it. And like, I've been over this before. It's okay to not like Mamoru Hosoda. Like, it's okay. It's okay if you think that the first 2/3 of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time are maybe the best thing he'll ever make.
Oh, God.
the best thing he will ever make.
Summer Wars means a lot to me. I like it a lot.
You mean
obviously,
Our War
like,
Game.
Now you're saying it. You would get mad. Wait a minute. You would get mad if you like, we're making
why.
Digimon jokes.
But that's why. That's why. Summer Wars would not mean
Summer
as much
Wars
to you
standalone...
if it were not a good remake of a Digimon movie, which you're Jacob Chapman,
you're
and it's Digimon.
Right. You're absolutely right. It is a good standalone remake of the emotional core that made a Digimon movie satisfying, and so I like it for that. You know,
right. Imagine if there was a movie that you also loved that was like Pikachu slaps himself at the end or something like
Pikachu slaps himself at the end of the first Pokemon movie, so
right.
That does in fact really happen.
So if you put next, if you take Pokemon the first movie, and you take like the emotional core of Pokemon the first movie, and you remade it as another thing
right.
that was not connected to the franchise, but you still like you would appreciate that like in concert with each other.
Yes.
You're like it's not so much a standalone thing; it's more like this is taking this really emotionally valid and like well written. Thing from this silly Digimon movie and
right.
turning it into like a big budget
with this
family
thing. I can't think of the Digimon movie without thinking of that ska soundtrack.
Who is on that score?
Oh, who isn't? Like... Who isn't? Let me think. Less Than Jake.
Yep.
Shit. Fuck. Bare Naked Ladies. I gotta dig into my brain, dig deep. But it is.
It was Bare Naked Lady was it was ska, right? So was it like well no, I'm thinking of Swing.
Hang on, I'm just gonna Digimon the movie soundtrack. I'm gonna see what names there are besides the two that came to my mind.
Let's hear it.
The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Okay. Yeah. Real Big Fish? It was Real Big Fish?
No, there's no Real Big Fish on here.
Okay, well.
Summer Camp.
I guess if you have the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and the Real Big Fish show up,
Fat Boy Slim,
they just cancel each other.
A Smash Mouth. How could I have forgotten All-Star? All-Star
right.
Is
Smash Mouth.
All-Star is, for some fucking reason, the opening song, not counting the rap, to the movie.
Well, the movie came out when?
The movie came out in, like, 1999. It came out in English
right.
in 2000.
Every movie had All-Star in it.
Yeah.
Every single movie. Speaking of which, I just wanted to bring this up. I was listening to the radio the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Terrestrial radio.
I recall it existing.
Well, if you listen to the radio now, it's full of a bunch of weird ads for stuff that like you would never go to. Like radio-sponsored like music festivals.
iHeartRadio music festival.
Yeah, iHeartRadio, that kind of thing. I heard an advertisement for a sweepstakes where they're like, we'll take over your neighborhood and we will throw a block party with... Sugar Ray and Smash Mouth. They will come
okay.
to your neighborhood
look,
and play a concert.
Look, you joke, but if I won that, I would be on fucking cloud nine. I'd be like, yo, guys, Smash Mouth is going to play I'm going to record Smash Mouth playing in my fucking backyard. Like,
but it's not your backyard. You're subjecting the entire neighborhood
That's
to it.
That's what makes it funny.
Exactly. But they present it as like, wouldn't this be incredible? And you're like,
yes, but not for the reasons.
Not for the reasons that you're thinking. I'm going to wear my Shrek Halloween costume.
If I win this sweepstakes, I'm getting a Shrek mask and I'm making Smash Mouth only play All-Star like 20 times in a row. That's what's happening.
They would, for the right price, I bet they would do.
But I'd be like, okay, I know I won this contest, but here's what I need you guys to do. I need you to only play All-Stars until everyone wants to kill you.
Could you imagine that? If you had the power, like, imagine that as like a quirk. Mm. You could, that's your quirk.
If you can make.
At any point, I can make, I can summon Smash Mouth and, you know, with opening act Sugar Ray. Mm-hmm. And they sing their one song. Which is what was
every
that?
Morning.
They had two. It was that one, and I Just Want to Fly, right?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Put your arms around me, baby. Put your arms around me.
Oh, man. Every morning.
It was a
that
different
was a
time.
Sugar Ray song? Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Just those two. They play like state fairs now.
Mm-hmm.
If
you're a ska band from the late 90s, that's what you do now.
I would totally, like. Here's a good version of that would be the B-52s, right?
The B-52s isn't ska.
No, it's not, but like...
We were talking about Mirai, I just want
to... If you could subject the neighborhood to a band...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like,
I would see the B-52s voluntarily.
Well, of course you would, but that's like actual fun. Not ironic fun, it's
right.
actual fun.
I would not see Smash Mouth voluntarily, but I would want to win a contest where Smash Mouth performs on my street. That's very different. These two things are very different.
I feel like I would want to learn how to do a backflip if Smash Mouth were playing in my neighborhood. I would want to do it while
holding a boombox and a Shrek mask.
Oh yeah.
And some J's.
There you go. All right, anyway, we were talking about that Mamoru Hosoda movie. Remember The Boy and the Beast?
Barely.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
I don't know, man. Like, it's okay to not like his shit, you know? Yeah. Like, it's all right.
I don't, yeah. My trajectory with Hosoda is Girl Who Left Through Time, good movie. Summer Wars, really good movie. Not, like, wouldn't Hosoda great, like, really, 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 you know, bust my shit up, but it was really good. And then Wolf Children, I admire parts of it, but it doesn't quite work for me. I just have some emotional problems with it. Boy and the Beast, trash. Mirai, no, not good. Sorry, dude.
I feel like with Wolf Children, it's just that screenshot of the wolf boy with the blue hair.
Okay, so are we going to talk about the furry in the room on Mirai?
Yeah, sure, why not? Like, so, in this movie, the kid...
Do you want to describe the scene?
The kid is like, I'm going to become the puppy, like, there's a...
So he's jealous
he's jealous of the dog, right?
Well, he's jealous of his sister. So his sister is born, and look, I like the metaphor he's making, but you make it to an 8-year-old boy, not a 4-year-old boy who can't understand it. You make it to an 8-year-old boy who, like, reacts to it. Like, again, here's the thing. I like the conceit of the film. I do not understand the tone, which is sort of talking down to, and I don't understand the choice of age for the child who cannot appreciate it. So that was my issue. But I like the concept of the movie, and in that, yeah, when his sister's born, he starts getting jealous, and then at this, and his dog starts talking. His dog becomes a person and starts talking.
Oh, right, and then he becomes the dog.
Yeah, and so basically what happens is the dog... I think this is a good concept. I think it's an interesting concept that the dog becomes a person and starts talking to him. And he says, well, yeah, well, you know what? You replaced me. Your sister is replacing you, but you're just like me. This is what happened to me.
Boy, it sounds like emotional territory that's worth mining.
And then it doesn't work. I know. I wish it worked, but it just doesn't come together.
These are all like interesting emotions to explore,
yeah,
but unfortunately it's a Mamoru Hosoda film.
Well, yeah. And so, but here's the thing. He doesn't just take the place of the dog, which would be funny. That would be funny. Like, that would be like, oh, that is a thing a 4-year-old does. He starts imitating the family pet. Of course, I think I did that when I was a little kid. But like, the way that it happens is the dog becomes human, and as he's talking about like, you're going to be replaced next, his tail falls off, and then the little boy picks it up. The little boy picks up this tail, and this happens quite slowly. They indulge in this scene.
Oh, they sure do.
And then he rams it up his ass.
And then he like.
He grabs that tail and he shoves it right up his cornhole.
And it is a lavish transformation sequence.
It is a lavishly animated transformation sequence where this little boy becomes not a dog.
He becomes a furry.
A
furry. Yeah, like big, the ears come out and he's just like jubilant. And it's like, this is the Hosoda experience.
This is a fetish.
The Hosoda experience.
This is a fetish. And well, here's the thing.
Which I'm not formally shaming it.
No, I'm not shaming it. I'm just saying it exists. That all we're saying is that
homeboy's a furry and all of his movies are
he's
into
a furry.
That.
But here's the I want to formally apologize to every single furry who ever told me Wolf Children is clearly made by a furry, and I was like, I don't know. Like I think it's going for more of a fairy tale thing.
If this were a video, I would just smash cut to that shot.
Yeah,
of the
and I want to apologize.
With the blue hair.
Every single one of you was right. Like, every single one of you who watched Summer Wars and Wolf Children and said, I think Hosoda's a fucking furry. And I was like, I don't know about that. I want to apologize. You are absolutely right. He is a furry. Boy and the Beast kind of proved it. This makes it 100% because there's a transformation sequence. So it's like, oh no, this is a fetish.
I really want to stress.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I was wrong. He's a furry.
But more so than that, I want to make this clear.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that I really don't. Being a furry is it's cool. It's harmless. It's a totally fine thing. You're valid if you're a furry.
I just didn't know.
Totally
that,
fine.
I just didn't
it's
know.
Just that it's super fucking obvious that that's what's going on here, and it's in all of his films, and it's kind of like Quentin Tarantino not wanting to talk about
when
his
you
feet
can't,
thing.
The first time you see Pulp Fiction, maybe you're not aware that he's a foot fetishist. By the time you get to Django, you're well aware. It's like, it's just a fetish.
Did you ever see the deleted scenes from Death Proof?
No.
Okay, so it's just Kurt Russell worshiping Rosario Dawson's feet for like a minute.
Oh.
Like a solid minute.
I believe it.
It is pure fetishism.
But like imagine it's 1992 and you're watching Pulp Fiction and you're like, no, I don't. I mean, like, you know, he could be, but that's
maybe.
Not really my business. Right, that was me and Wolf Children.
So there's 15 shots of Uma Thurman's feet. I don't know
what he wants to do, though. It's like, it's possible, but maybe it's just an aesthetic choice. That was me and Wolf Children. Now it's like, you guys are right. He likes Anthro, and that's fine. Whatever. That's his business.
While condescending to his toddler child.
What is his kid's art going to be like in 20 years?
I want to see his kids' movies.
His kids' art in 20 years.
You know what? Here's the thing, though. I will probably continue to watch Mamoru Hosoda movies because they are sold to me as prestige pieces.
Right.
Over and over again, they are sold as these prestige. Maybe he's the next Miyazaki.
I mean, look, you know,
horrible fucking phrase. The next Miyazaki.
One thing I will never say about. I will never accuse Hosoda of not being ambitious. He makes ambitious movies. Ambitious family movies. He does. Whether I like them or not, and I did not like Boy and the Beast at all, I'm not going to accuse him of resting on his laurels of being safe. He is always trying something.
That's true.
So I didn't care for Mirai, but like I like the concept.
I mean, look, I engaged with it. He made it. We ran a review of it. Kim Morrissey wrote it up.
Yeah, Kim really liked it.
I went to Kim. I was like, I think you were pretty kind to this movie.
Kim really liked it, as far as I understand. So, you know, fine. Different takes.
Yeah, totally. I was just like, I feel like this review is quite kind to this film. Maybe I just can't be trusted on Hosoda, though. It's like,
well, you didn't like him to begin with, so I don't think that he's your aesthetic. And I'm fine on him. I don't like Anthro, but I like monsters, and so that his ties to Digimon and his ties to so I recently just experienced Undertale for the first time. I'm not through it, and I'm not going to talk about it for a long time. But Undertale loves monsters in the same way that I love monsters, and so does Digimon, and so do aspects of Summer Wars. Even though those are avatars, it's not the same, but it's adjacent. But like. The Anthro thing is anathema to me. It's a, what's the word? What's the Tumblr word they use? Squick. It's an anti-fetish for me. Like,
you have the same thing, but
I love monsters, right? So I'm at odds with Hosoda, where I love and am squicked out by his aesthetic. Cause I'm like, oh, I too love animals and monsters. Oh no, it's furry. I don't like that. So it's a very thin line.
A really specific thing, though. Like, you just don't like that mascot animal look.
No, it's specifically, look, if it's animalian, like, here's what I like. Animals, monsters, things that they seem like they're part of nature or the supernatural, like Devilman Crybaby, like, you know, Devilman in general. That's great. When it seems like something that was created in a cartoon to be, it's like a person, but it's wearing a suit. Its face is not something that would exist in nature, but something that exists to convey like a childlike or friendly emotion. You know, clowns, mascots, things like that.
Cars.
I hate Cars. The film, the Pixar, I hate that aesthetic.
I associate, but
Anthro. I don't like Anthro. I don't like anthropomorphization. Jacob, I like monsters.
Jacob, I'm just saying, like, these all go, it feels like these all go kind of in the same box. Like, there's an aesthetic that you just react very
poorly to. That I react very poorly to, that freaks me out, and that's what it is.
But it's a big popping eyes and the giant grin.
And yet I love anime, so it's not the eye size.
It's not the same.
It's the expression on the face.
No,
it's the expression on the face.
I feel like people listening to this will get you. They
okay,
will
good.
You.
Because like it's really a thin line. I love anime, but I don't. Furry stuff scares the shit. Sonic the Hedgehog scares the shit out of me.
It's a direct. Direct fucking line from Lightning McQueen to Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's
a direct line.
And it's a line that makes me, like, gives me, like, cold sweats.
It's Jacob's kryptonite.
It's Jacob's kryptonite. And Hasoda does indulge it a little bit, but he also indulges aesthetics that I like that are more naturalistic. I'm torn. Like, the scene, there's a scene, that gif of the scene in Wolf Children where. Yuki, I think Yuki is the girl. Yeah, where Yuki opens up that box of her treasures, and it's like bird skulls and leaves, and it's like, yep, it me like that. You know, I love that moment, but I don't like the. And then she fucked the dog man who looks like a person in the scene. It's like, oh no. That's weird, but I like the scene where the puppies are running around chewing on things, and then she opens up her box of treasures and it's dead birds. Like, that's great, but not so much the Anthro. So, you know, Mirai was very, very Anthro in its execution.
I'm really looking forward to Mirai coming out, and I want to hear other people's opinions on it, because like I know how I felt. Like, I immediately didn't like it. It was like the first like 15 minutes I was like, I hate this, and it didn't improve.
It time, but it did. Oh, so
nope.
There's one scene where both you and I were like, okay, this is the best scene in the movie. It doesn't pay off the way that I wanted it to, but the scene where he gets lost, it's the climax of the film, it's the pre-climax of the film. It's the darkest hour of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was good. The visual style completely changes.
He got into some pretty good visual abstraction.
Yeah, he did. And
there was some pretty interesting stuff in there.
Oh, but that's another problem with Mirai. The CG integration is very poor.
Right, I was talking about that.
The CGI
so it's like
is
super,
not good.
But it's jarring in the same way that, like, remember the Cars and Ghost in the Shell standalone complex?
Right.
It's that noticeable.
It's like,
hey, that apple is CG he's holding.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's unnecessary. It's like him experimenting with doing something that he would normally do, that has always done in traditional animation in CG, and it is not working.
Yeah,
it's very distracting.
So we did an interview with Hasoda. Kim actually interviewed him. We've got those going up, but he apparently wants to do like a whole CG feature. He wants to do CG, completely. Mm. Which, all right, fine, but like, hope he's got an eye for that, you know.
And if I'm being completely honest, this is another thing. I watched this a couple weeks ago, so I forgot this part. But the other thing that bugged me about Mirai, divorced from the storytelling, was it is not animated as well as.
No, it's not.
It feels like you're watching Cinderella and then you watch The Jungle Book or The Rescuers. It's like, this is a step down visually. Like, it feels more. It's the same style.
You're saying they switched over to the Xerox machine.
It's not the same. This is a metaphor. It's not a one to one. It's the same style. It's just the same thing. But there's less animation and there's less visual experimentation. It's much safer. It's a much visually safer movie.
Well, and it's just, it's not as...
The story's ambitious, but the visuals are like...
They tried to put up... Okay. Look, this sucks, but like, they tried to put a bunch of effort into the character animation on the kid. Mm-hmm. And it's just this like pseudo Ghibli shit that doesn't work. Like his...
I forgot.
It's like a cross between... It's like a cross between like Ghibli and like Toriyama, like a little bit of a Dr. Slump thing going on. Like, mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. It doesn't look good. I thought it looked
I forgot
awful.
About the child that. Okay, so
he's screaming
my number
the
one
entire
problem,
time.
My number one problem with this movie is that. So we're like, okay, well, there's no reason. There's no reason that. So I talked about the magical realism metaphor. It doesn't quite gel to me because it's like, well, there's no way that this kid can process or even like. So this kid can't imagine this stuff because his brain is not capable of processing. If it's like magically happening to him as part of a metaphor, he isn't able to appreciate it. So that was my issue, right? But they tried to address this in the film itself by having him, by having the boy, and this is the biggest mistake to me, voiced by very clearly an older woman.
Oh, yeah.
Not older woman, like a teen girl, like a young...
it was like a Goku.
It was a Goku-type voice, but the girl herself is not very old.
It was obviously...
It was obvious, but here's the thing. We know that, like, of course, there's voice actresses.
An adult lady.
There's lots of voice actors who can imitate cartoonish boys and stuff like that. And, of course, he's cast for naturalism in the past. But this was, like, the most deliberately, like, the most Goku-like, the most you are watching a cartoon. Like, Timmy Turner. Like, Timmy Turner levels of this is a woman pretending to be a boy, a little boy, but it's so heightened because it's supposed to be a cartoon. So you're hearing, like, what is a very obviously cartoonish, fake little boy voice. And I think he was doing that because he was trying to abstract this child from a real child into something more magical realism-y, but it does not work. It's just distracting. It doesn't make the metaphor work.
It sounded like there's a Japanese lady who's unhappy with her meal. I'm at Jonathan's.
Oh, no.
In the booth next to me is a Japanese lady who is unhappy with her meal and is complaining about it. Loudly.
Yes.
That is what it sounds like.
It does not
convincingly sound like a little boy for even a second.
But I think that, and here's the thing, I think that was intentional, but I think it was a bad
choice.
To
what end?
Because you're right, there's no way that this little boy can process these giant emotionally complex like things that a 30-year-old would be figuring out in therapy, visions that he's seeing. So I think that they gave him not a literal little boy's voice because they were going for this metaphor, but it's like you made him way too young and it doesn't track.
Well, I mean, I should stress, go see this shit. Go see it.
Yeah, it's like, interesting, go watch it. I guess. Yeah, you
like,
know?
Look, he's an artist. I might not like his shit, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't experience his art, you know, and I'm really curious to see what other people think of it because obviously we had a really negative reaction to it, so... I want to know, but like I honestly think his movies have only gotten worse.
It's just a roller coaster downhill.
Like,
I have to agree that they've only gotten worse recently. I mean, Summer Wars is better than Girl Who Left the Time.
That's about it. Well, we've established that's because of Digimon.
Well, yeah, sure, maybe, but I agree with you that his last three films are like a progressive step down in quality.
Wolf Children was better than Boy and the Beast was better than this.
Yes.
And I didn't really like any of those. So, yeah.
I mean, was Boy and the Beast better than this? It was easier. Boy and the Beast was easier to sit
through. Oh, boy, it was.
Mirai, I think
it
Mirai
was. This is easily his worst movie, by
Mirai
the way.
Is more,
easily.
It's more ambitious, but it's
far
harder to
and
sit
away.
Through. Like, let me put it this way. It is more fun. I feel like if I had to discuss Boy and the Beast, I wouldn't have as much to say. I have more to say about Mirai, but the experience of sitting through Mirai is much more unpleasant than sitting through.
Yeah, we really didn't
That's
like it.
That's what it is.
I really
it's
need to
really
know what other
unpleasant.
People think of this movie.
Yeah.
I need to know. If you see it, tell us what you thought. I want to know.
Yes.
It was another thing that came out. You know, we spent half an hour talking about Mirai.
That's good.
And Smash Mouth. Castlevania.
Okay.
Castlevania Season 2 came out. Mm-hmm. You blew through it in a night, and it took me a little while to get the rest of it.
I didn't expect it to just eat me alive, but it did.
You were really looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, but if it was starting to get disappointing,
it's also like about 2 hours of material. It's not that long. 8 episodes, and they're like 20 minutes.
Honestly,
each.
My expectations were so high that if it had let me down, I probably would have taken a little bit of a break because it would have hurt me emotionally that it had let me down, but it didn't let me down even a little bit.
All right.
Fucking loved it.
So I'm in the middle of writing a review of this. It's taken me a little bit longer because my feelings on it are a little complicated and I'm struggling a little bit with exactly how to articulate.
Well, you're like Castlevania is like one of your favorite things, and I don't know very much about the video games. I'm not completely clueless, but I didn't grow up with them. I experienced them as an adult, and so but you this is like close to your heart, right? This is like for you what Legend of Zelda is to me.
Yes.
And so you have a very different take on it. Whereas for me, I'm just like, oh, nice vampire story. And I'm just appreciating it on its own merits. And you have like, look, you have context for all the stuff that I don't have.
Okay. At the same time. So I just interviewed Adi Shankar, who is the showrunner of Castlevania, the executive producer. And he was telling me like, well, it's kind of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're going to take what we want from these stories, but we're going to remix everything to make it stronger in the long run. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, I think, the plan.
Yeah.
So, and my complaint...
boy, did they ever... Because they made some choices that I loved.
And my, exactly. My complaints are largely built around... I thought this second season would be a little bit more self-contained than it currently is. It does feel like it was written knowing that they would have a third season. The first half plays a lot differently than the second half. And my biggest problem with it, and this is the thing I'm having the hardest time figuring out how to articulate, I don't really like the way they did Alucard. I don't like what they ultimately wound up doing with him. And that's... I
love it.
Yeah, right. Okay, so...
I don't know. Right. I don't know him from Adam, but I love this guy. And I love the journey they're taking him on.
Of course you love Alucard. Of course you do.
Well, you say,
look
of
at him and his costume and his attitude, and he's the sad son of Dracula. Like, I've been loving this.
They could have fucked that up so
I've
bad.
Been in love with that guy since 1997.
Well, they could have. They could. Well, here's the thing.
You really say, like 88 whenever Castlevania 3 came
you
out.
You say, of course, but they really could have fucked that up very easily.
Yeah, totally.
90s sad goth choony boy. Like, they could have completely ruined that, and they didn't. He is extremely lovable and complex. And
so, right. So Shankar compared this to Game of Thrones, right? And I feel like that's immediately apparent
right.
because what they do is Dracula can't just murder everyone on his own. His armies of the night are actually commanded by a series of generals. All of those generals show up to his palace. And then suddenly we have factions in the same way that you do in a show like Game of Thrones.
And his generals are like, factions. Excuse me, why are we throwing all the food in the garbage?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Why are we tossing out all the food?
Yeah, and Dracula's just sad. You know,
Dracula's like, it doesn't matter anymore.
I don't care anymore.
I don't care.
So he brings along Carmilla, who is a villain in the games. Not in the Castlevanias that are my favorites, but she's in, like, Circle of the Moon, and, like, she's a major character in Castlevania Lord of Illusion.
And she's just a classic piece of vampire lore. So she shows up.
Yeah,
classic. I've never seen Carmilla in Castlevania. I don't have any idea how she's characterized there. But they said Carmilla, and it was like, I know who this is.
Oh, right,
is.
Yeah. Well, we were just watching Vampire Hunter D. Bloodlust, right?
Right.
There's a character in that, too. Like, that's just classic vampire stuff. Uh-huh. And I liked that, but it didn't go anywhere because all of it was just set up for season three. It's just, here's how we're going to keep this show going after we've mined the emotional material that it currently exists with these characters.
Right.
And I think my biggest problem with it was it basically the only emotional gold in Castlevania is between Alucard and Dracula. That's kind of it. That is the most potent stuff.
It's the most potent stuff. I disagree that it is the only thing.
But they also didn't really do anything to develop the Belmonts, like as characters.
Well,
they
so there's one really Belmont. There's one Belmont, and I thought he got developed very well.
Well, sure, but it kind of feels like the whole show is just, okay, so Warren Ellis understood that here's where the gold is. It's an Alucard and Dracula, so I'm just going to completely refocus this whole thing to be about that. And if you want this show to run for season after season after season after season, you've kind of already taken the best stuff. They've already done it. So...
I disagree,
like,
but
after this, I better get some really well-developed Belmonts. Mm-hmm. I better get some amazing Belmont characters, mm-hmm. because Trevor basically finds his vault, and that's it. Once he finds the vault, that's kind of it for Trevor. He fights Dracula. That's kind of it, though. He gets the Morning Star Whip. Sure, cool, but that's it for his emotional...
His last moment of character development, like, well, I mean...
He's gonna have babies with Sypha.
Like, no, that's not what I mean. Like, the last thing he does important as a character is, yes, decide to journey with Sypha. But he's already at a place emotionally where he was ready to do that much earlier. The last place where Trevor makes like a step forward emotionally is when he's riding the ice elevator up past the portrait of Leon Belmont,
right?
And he lets the past go, and it's like That's it. And he's done after that. After that, his story is basically, he's emotionally, he's completed his therapy as far as our viewership is concerned.
But what's the next thing?
His babies.
Right.
His babies. He's done.
So they're going to cut.
His issues are kind of resolved.
Are they going to smash cut to like 100 years from now, 50 years from now?
No. It's going to be, I mean, I have no idea what they're doing, but I assume it's just the next season is just going to be Carmilla as a villain and Dracula to be resurrected. And while Isaac journeys the desert gathering an army to resurrect Dracula.
Right. You've got Isaac out there who I am pretty sure becomes the Dark Priest Shaft.
Just a wild guess.
I think. Yeah. So the next thing is going to be about we have to find Dracula's organs and resurrect him. Mm-hmm. I assume that's the next thing. But there's no Belmonts. There's no Belmont character. But
Hector.
Hector's
great. I love
no,
Hector.
No, but Hector's not. Come on, man. You can't make a whole fucking thing about Hector. Like,
you can.
Give me Simon Belmont. Richter Belmont.
They'll show up.
Alucard. Give
They'll
me Alucard.
Show up. They're saving. This just takes place before they're born.
You
They'll
gave
get
me
eventually.
All of Alucard's emotional depth.
No, here's the thing. No, you
all
didn't.
Of it.
No, they didn't. It seems like to me like Alucard is at the beginning of a journey. I feel like there's so much more emotional depth to be mined.
If he had blown up Castlevania at the end, that would have been in line with Alucard's character.
No.
If he'd blown it up, if he said, we're going to raise this fucking place to the ground, and I'm going to walk away from it off into the night to turn into mist, and then a wolf, and then a bat.
Yeah.
I'm going to go do all these things.
He's going to get there in like a couple hundred years, but he's not ready for that yet.
Yeah, but hundreds of years. Okay, so, all right. I guess I want to know, like, what's the next thing? Because this feels like there's no Belmonts, and you mined all the great material from Alucard. You kind of mined it already. You can't give us that again for a while. Like, you can't even revisit it, or it's going to feel like a retread.
Yeah.
This whole thing is just Alucard and his fucking dad, Shinji and Gendo, over and over and over again. Like,
I
don't know.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant.
I fully acknowledge that my complaints are largely bullshit, but as a lifelong fan of this shit, I love these characters from the bottom of my heart. While I was sitting there watching them, I was like, this is good, but it also feels weirdly rushed, and like they don't quite know what to do with the Belmonts as characters. Because I asked Adi Shankar, I was like, hang on, do you see this as the story of this sort of generational story of it's Dracula versus the Belmonts? Do you see it as, because the connecting tissue between all of these things is Dracula as a character.
Right.
He keeps coming back. How are they going to
You just can't get rid of him.
How are they going to characterize that? How are they going to deal with that? And if you don't have, like, the foundation of the whole thing is supposed to be the Belmonts, but that's not the way this show is treating it. The obvious emotional center of it is Alucard.
And I think that's wise if you're going to have seasons after seasons where characters grow old and die. I think the core, that there's plenty of room for other character arcs, and I think everybody, you know, kind of got development and got explored. Making sure your emotional core is with the characters who are going to live through this entire thing is smart.
I tell you, I don't want to see Alucard in the next season. I don't want him to be in it.
I want to see him, but only like in episode 7. I want him to sit around
the next thing,
off screen until near the end of the season.
The next thing
but
should
that's
be,
me personally.
The next thing should be they resurrect Dracula and the Belmonts have to fight him, and that's what it's about. Like,
Alucard needs to be around for when his dad comes back.
But he's not. He's not till way later. And if you're going to do the Symphony of the Night stuff,
right? Yeah, maybe he does. You know what? Maybe he sets out one resurrection. You're right, sure. But the point
is, you can't just do that. You see what I'm saying? You can't just hit that shit over and over and over and over
again. I agree with you, but here's the thing. I agree with you that I wouldn't want to see the same beat repeated, but I don't want to go too far into detail with this, but the when Alucard beats Dracula, without spoiling too much or getting too overwhelmed with my feelings on the matter and how strongly I feel about it, when Alucard beats Dracula for the first time, it's anticlimactic on purpose. It does not feel like a catharsis, like, yes. Like, it doesn't feel like the end of Symphony of the Night. It feels like an aborted, failed. It feels like the first impact or the second impact or whatever the case may be. It is not cathartic for Alucard. He does have to do it again, and when he does it again, it's not going to be repeating beats. It's going to be a completely different confrontation.
I hope so.
That's what I strongly feel. That's the impression that I got.
But I don't want that for a long time. Like,
I think that they...
Give me some Belmonts.
I agree with you. But I liked what they did with Trevor. You're right. It could have been more dramatic, but it was still emotionally satisfying, even though it was more low-key. And, you know, I don't know. I'm a stan. I really liked Castlevania.
Yeah, it was... Look, the show is better than anyone deserves. Like, it's really good. And the animation... Sam Dietz, man. He is directing the hell out of that thing.
Sam, I want to give you just... all the props.
It's so good.
You are a fantastic director.
The show looks great, and his shot selection and like,
I'm not even talking just the animation cuts, which are great. Like
when he chooses to hold something,
when he chooses not to animate, and when he chooses to hold the camera, it is always worth it.
Fantastic,
like, just thoughtful,
brilliant.
Thank you for being thoughtful about your material. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Totally brilliant. Like that's like I hope that people kind of understand where I'm coming from here. It's like. I have nothing but undying respect for this whole production. I think they knocked it out of the fucking park. There's no way anyone would have been able to do this better. I just thought they kind of wrote themselves into a corner right away at the end of season two.
I disagree.
Because there's not much else that they've shown me where I don't care that much about Carmilla or Isaac or Hector.
I love Hector.
Those aren't the main characters.
I love Hector and his undead pugs.
But they're
pugs.
Not the main characters.
Why can't they be? This is an ensemble show, and there is no main character. There's an
emotional
focus.
I don't
want to
fucking watch Castlevania. It's just about Hector and Isaac. Come on. That's not what I'm here for.
I do. I love you, Hector.
Belmonts! Give me some Belmonts.
You'll get more of them. They're going to have... He and Cypher are going to have a bunch of babies that you'll come to love or
hate. I need to see Maria. I need to see Richter. I need to see all these people.
You're going to see all those people. But in the meantime, Hector has to break free. Hector has to go all Kodamine Kire on Carmilla, and that's going to be great.
Is that what's going
to
happen?
I have no idea. I know he's going to become a good guy, so we have to see how that's going to happen.
Well, I will excitedly... I mean, look. What a beautiful world. That we get this kind of a thing.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Amazing that we get this kind of a
also,
just stellar adaptation.
Also, Godbrand.
Okay, so Godbrand.
R.I.P.
Okay.
Godbrand.
We got to talk about Godbrand.
Oh, we do?
Because Godbrand is just... It's just Peter Stormare. Like, I'm pretty sure they didn't give him any direction at all. he just showed up, and he's like, I'm just going to read this! Like, I'm Peter Stormare.
I'm a
like,
fucking Viking.
Yeah, fucking Viking. Yeah, like,
and they're like, all right.
Peter Stormare... heightens anything that he is in. If he is in your thing is better because Peter Stormare is in it. And it's the full Stormare the whole time. Even though
I like boats. I'm a fucking Viking.
That's what I do. I make boats out of things. Like,
now you're
so
Russian
good.
For some reason.
Well, he's a little... Well, what... I don't...
He's doing like a... He's doing an impossible to nail down Eastern European...
My Peter Stormare is not very good. I can't do
look,
a very
mine isn't
impression.
Either. I'm just saying like...
I'm just saying...
It's interesting to like, what accent do you decide it is? Spanish? Russian? Eastern European? It could be all of them or none of them.
He's incredible. And he's just reading... He's just like reading the shit off the page.
Mm-hmm.
He also dies really early. And I was pretty disappointed with that.
Well,
and that was a big thing about all that general stuff is that like none of it matters after episode 5. It all just fades into the background. It's like for next time. Here's next time. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get you were setting that up, but like the entire first 4 episodes are mostly about that. Mm-hmm. The 3 main characters get stuck in the Belmont vault for the entire show, pretty much until the end.
You know,
cool.
you've got good writing.
But I also,
when you can
hey, look,
put your heroes in the library.
I'm just going to say
the show.
That was a pretty bad rendition of Bloody Tears too. It was off tempo. It didn't sound quite right. It wasn't right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So if I'm going to offer one criticism about Castlevania, I think the weakest part, it's not bad, it's not actively distracting, but the weakest part of the production is the music. Like,
yeah.
I could take it or leave it. The music at no point really accented the experience for me. That's my only nitpick. Everything else I fucking loved.
Yeah, there's no power. Like, they do Bloody Tears. Like, so this is the moment you've been waiting for. Trevor and Sypha and Alucard are storming fucking Castlevania, right? They're getting in the front gates and they're fucking murdering everybody. And Bloody Tears starts, you know, da, 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 you know that song. But the arrangement is strings. It's just strings and the tempo is off. Like, it's not quite right. And it's not that I know what the right thing is. It's just that song is supposed to be like guitar. It's like power. It's like metal. It's not like this kind of soft, sort of Lord of the Rings thing. It's not, that's not really the power of it.
Right. And well, I don't have context for the original, but yeah, like the music never really, you know. I mean, in some ways, that's a testament to the direction and the animation, that it was still, and the acting. The acting, the voice cast in this is so good.
Yeah, that's something you play on like an organ, mm-hmm. like on an electric organ.
But like everything else was so impressive that the fact that the music is so nothing actually was okay, because it was like, and sometimes if your music isn't good enough, sometimes it's detrimental if all your other gears aren't turning, but everything else was so good that I was like, all right, it's fine.
I think it's like an A show. It's like an A show that I personally reacted to as though it were more like a B or like a B minus. Like,
sure.
All right. I respect this tremendously.
What about the part where Alucard turns into a wolf and then telekinetically stabs somebody or supernaturally stabs somebody with a sword as a wolf?
You know when you
that's the funniest shit I've ever seen.
If you transform into a wolf in Symphony of the Night, you can press the forward button twice. He will hold the sword in his mouth.
Yay!
And run through enemies.
Yay!
And everything dies. It's really good.
That's good. Well, I figured, look, I haven't played it, but I figured, look, at the point that Dracula summoned a giant volcano lava ball and shot it down a hallway, I was like, all right. This is definitely a reference, because I was like, what?
Yeah, totally.
That's a giant lava ball. That wasn't in the, I assume this is a reference. Yeah.
What I need them to do is, the next time they have Alucard on the show, which, God willing, will not be for another season or two.
Oh, he'll be
He'll transform into a bat, and the thing is, in Symphony of the Night, if you transform into a bat and you press left or right at all, mm-hmm. he makes a bat squeak. It goes, every time you hit it. Like, it's mm-hmm. exactly right. It's like a little soundboard button. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can do music. You can you can make all kinds of fun things. Yeah. I need a little bit of reference. They did do a Turkey in the Wall reference.
Oh. Yeah, see, I didn't see that. What happens?
They break down a wall, and, like, there's a turkey,
there's
I guess.
There's a split second of a turkey.
It's a split second in there. There's a turkey or something.
Well, that's where it belongs. I didn't notice. It didn't distract, but people will find it and, you know.
Yeah.
Like a turkey in a wall. They will find it.
I guess I've turned into that guy who just, like, complains because it's not quite what
no,
I wanted.
Yeah, it's okay. Look, it you know, and it's recent. We just watched it, so your feelings, my feelings
I'm
going
to have to go. Like, I think
time.
That's the reason I'm not done with the review yet is because I'm like, look, I got to watch this again. I got to make sure I know how I feel about it because I feel really strongly about this stuff, like really strongly about this material. Again, lifelong fan. That doesn't make me special or anything. It just means that I think a lot about it. And so, yeah, I guess I'm struggling. I guess I'm struggling with it a little bit. I'm like, I'm not sure how to present this because my complaints do feel specious, mm-hmm. but I can't help how I reacted to it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Next time, all I can say is that when season 3 of Castlevania is finally made available in 2 years or whatever, you know, certainly they should take all the time they need to get it right. And, when the third season of it is available, I will do exactly what I did when the second season came out, which is turn on Netflix, see that pop up in my queue, and say, I'm interested in this.
Mm-hmm. What?
Thank you. Thank you. Anyway.
I'll never get tired of quoting Symphony of the Night. Okay. All right, that does it. Yo, next week, I fucking promise we're going to talk about Higurashi no Naku Koroni. And Higurashi no Naku Koroni Kai.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to it.
We will.
Anyway, thanks for hanging out, Jacob.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. We'd really appreciate it. It helps us out a lot. We'll see you all next week.